Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents Text Me on Tuesday, All is Fair in Love and Texting, by Whitney Dineen and Melanie Summers, narrated by Avery Reed and Alexander Sundies. Chapter 1. Amy.
Hey, Ames, you want to grab a mani-pedi after our shift? My friend Tisha asks while hurrying past me to the pastry display.
You bet, I answer while changing the filter on the coffee maker and starting a new pot. Cause, you know, I have an extra $50 burning a hole in my pocket.
Not this again.
She flings a bear claw on the plate.
I know you're trying to get your catering business going. Got it. But you have to live, girl. Do something nice for yourself occasionally.
I did something nice for myself yesterday, T. I paid my electric bill. I say, bagging a cranberry orange muffin for a to-go order. The truth is, my feet are begging me to say yes to the pedicure after close to 8 hours straight rushing around on them.
I'm going to say it again. My brother is moving out of my place next week, and I'd rather have you for a roommate than anyone else in this world.
She bats her eyelashes at me, causing the whites of her eyes to shine brightly against the frame of her flawless ebony skin. I just don't want our living together to affect our friendship, I say, even though I've been giving serious consideration to her offer lately. I'm running out of money, and I'm not getting enough catering jobs to get my new business up and running fast enough to save the sinking ship that is my life.
I don't know how you can stand living in that shoebox you call an apartment. I'd be ready for the funny farm after one night. It's like a prison cell.
She convulses in a full-body shiver for effect. Tisha has accurately described my home. When I moved to New York City from Rochester last year, I was sure my catering business would thrive here, just like it had upstate. I was sure I'd be moving on up to the East Side, a la the Jeffersons theme song from that old TV show my parents liked to watch. That has not been the case. Even though I came to the Big Apple with enough money to pay my rent for a year, I had to take a waitressing job at the bakery to cover my other expenses. Electric, phone, toilet paper, the occasional new tube of lipstick. I've only bought two since I've been here. I ran out of rent money last month and had to start digging into my savings, which will not last with the price of Manhattan real estate such as it is.
When is Terrence leaving? I ask. 5 days, but you can move in any time and share my room until he's gone. That way you won't have to pay an extra month's rent.
I exhale like I'm trying to blow out birthday candles at the far end of Yankee Stadium. I'll do it. I'm month to month now, so I can leave at any time. As I refill the coffee creamers, I add,
but only if you're sure.
My friend throws her Amazonian arms around me and jumps up and down, causing the top of my head to bump against her chin.
All right, we're gonna have the best damn time there ever was.
You're a good friend, I tell her as I push her away to wipe off the cream that's now running down my apron.
Hurry up and finish what you're doing, then we can clock out and celebrate by getting our nails done. After that, we'll hit the Red Apple for a bottle of wine.
I'm feeling all kinds of things at the moment. Relief, trepidation, excitement. It's like I'm standing in the middle of a hurricane of emotion, looking for something solid to hold on to. When I can't find it, I decide to grab a hold of optimism as it flies by and see where it carries me. On the D train up to Harlem, Tisha asks,
how did your date go last night? You never told me.
Rolling my eyes, I reach out for one of the many stripper poles running down the aisle of the subway car. I've recently started calling them that after a flash mob of pole dancers came into the car I was riding last month. If you catch the video on YouTube, I'm the curvy blonde in the corner doing a facial impersonation of a mounted fish. You know, wide open eyes and a mouth the perfect O of shock and awe. My date was typical, I tell my friend. Wannabe young businessman who thinks he's about to take over the world, takes me to an expensive restaurant and suggests I only order off the appetizer side. Then, after spending the whole meal talking about himself, he pays the check, leaving a 10% tip. I looked. Then we get into a cab and he gives the driver his address.
Oh, slimy. What happened when you told him you weren't going home with him?
She asks, rubbing her hands together so quickly you'd think she was trying to start a fire survivor style. He had the cabbie pull over and then told me if he wasn't going to get an immediate return on his investment, I could find another way home.
Why, that no good dirty dog. What did you do?
I got out, but not before telling him he needed a stronger mouthwash and that only letting his date order appetizers for dinner was like having a tattoo that says Cheapy McTightwad on his forehead. The construction worker standing next to me wants to know,
what would have happened if he took you out for chicken and waffles?
I shoot him a conspiratorial look and lie. I would have been able to tell my friend here what his apartment looked like. Our polemate laughs uproariously.
Honey, if I wasn't already married, I'd be offering to take you out for that chicken right now.
Ignoring the intruder in our conversation, Tisha warns,
he better not have the nerve to set foot in Beantown again, or I'm going to spice up his coffee with some hot sauce.
Guys like him never return to the scene of the crime when they've been dissed. Their fragile male egos can't handle it. Getting out at 110th Street, we walk 3 blocks to Tisha's favorite nail salon called The Finger. We amble into the shop under the giant neon flashing sign of a hand flipping the bird.
Quan, Tisha calls out. We need the works. All 4 paws with gel and nail art. We're celebrating here.
Tisha has a little crush on Quan, who emigrated here from Korea 10 years ago. He gives off a sensitive, if not mysterious, vibe. As talented as he is with nails, the man could seriously get women to pay him to just stare at him all day. Did I mention he was good-looking? In heavily accented English, the handsome man in the salon tells her,
my name is Kevin, not Quan.
Aha, Tisha replies, and I'm Queen Latifah. Use your real name, man. Be proud of your roots.
Kevin slash Quan turns to the woman next to him and tells her something in Korean. She motions me to a massage chair. While the hot water pours in, soothing my aching feet, my phone pings, alerting me of a new email message. If I weren't desperately hoping it was a prospective new client, I would have ignored it and let Calgon take me away. Instead, I pull out my phone and read. Miss Tompkins, I've received your many flyers in the mail, and I'm intrigued not only by your persistence, but also by your menu. Our caterer unexpectedly dropped out of a corporate lunch we need served at our headquarters on Wall Street tomorrow. If you can help us out with this and my boss is happy with the food, I would be happy to steer more work your way. Byron Scott, Executive Assistant to Noel Fitzwilliam, Fitzwilliam and Associates. I let out a whoop of joy so loud, Tisha says,
girl, I almost tinkled in my drawers, and I'm not sure Quan here would appreciate having to clean up that kind of mess. What in the world are you yelling about?
Mani-pedis are on me, I shout. I just got my first in with Fitzwilliam and Associates. You're gonna have to count me out for that bottle of wine tonight, Tisha. When I'm done here, I'm going straight to the grocery store and start prepping for tomorrow's luncheon. I get busy sending a reply message to Byron, accepting the job and asking for details. Then I mentally start to prepare a list of all the tasks I need to complete to be ready in time. My Grandma Jane used to warn about counting my chickens before they hatched, but I'm not worried. I have a feeling my fortune is about to change.
Chapter 2. Noel. All right, team, I think that's it for changes. I want to thank you all for busting your arses, as we say in England, for the last 8+ months. I offer what I'm told is a rare smile to the 12 haggard staff members seated around the enormous polished mahogany conference room table. Before I let you go, I do have a few things to say. I know I don't have to tell you that tomorrow is the most important pitch of most of our careers, certainly mine anyway. One Rosenthal is the reason I made the trek across the pond and set up shop here last year. This tower would be the crown jewel of the Manhattan skyline, a shining beacon of the future of architecture here in the center of the universe. The tower will be luxurious, yet with environmentally conscious finishings and design, as well as cutting-edge technology. It's going to earn Fitzwilliam and Associates our rightful place on the world stage. Should we succeed tomorrow, and I believe we will, we'll become one of the most sought-after architectural firms on the globe. Decades worth of work will come from this one monumental project. I pause and steady my voice before I allow myself to sound excited. We've done the work. Now the final piece of the puzzle is to ensure we put our best foot forward tomorrow, or feet, I suppose, since there are several of us. There's a polite chuckle from around the room, but it's not because I'm funny. It's because I pay their rent. I'm relatively certain they all hate me, but I literally couldn't care less. I didn't get where I am today by worrying about winning popularity contests. Tomorrow, skip the perfumes and colognes. Mr. Brown Sr. is allergic to them, and we don't need him to be at all distracted from our message. And please, when you get in here, no fidgeting, no sniffling, no worried expressions. We must present ourselves calmly and confidently as we usher in this new era of design. I glance over at my highly distractible twin brother, Byron, who has served as my longtime executive assistant. Byron and I may be twins, but we are nothing alike, other than having identical noses, which we got from our mother, thank God, because our father has quite the honker, and similar smiles. Most people don't think we're brothers, let alone twins. He has sandy brown hair, while mine is almost black. His eyes are dark blue, mine are light green. He's Mr. Goodtime, and I'm Mr. Responsible, who employs Mr. Goodtime in order to keep him from ruining the family name by becoming a male stripper, which he announced as his true calling just after we blew out the candles on our 18th birthday cake. That was 18 years ago, and his ideas haven't gotten much better since. Byron isn't exactly what you'd call detail-oriented, a bit of a negative in an assistant, to be honest, but he's one of two people on this planet that I trust explicitly, the other one being me. Byron uses his middle name Scott as his last name, as requested by our father, the great Lord Fitzwilliam, shortly after Byron came out to the family. And yes, dear old Dad is a complete wanker, and neither of us will likely ever forgive him. Well, Byron might, but I certainly won't. As with most awful things in life, there is a silver lining to Byron having a different last name. It has allowed him to serve as a spy of sorts on my behalf. People love him. He's friendly, laid back, and easy to talk to, unlike me. So they often dish about how much they hate me, whether they're planning to quit, screw me over, and or if they'd like to choke the crap out of me and dump my body in the Thames, as one of my former junior architects put it. So, even though he screws up nearly as often as he gets things right, I gladly keep him around because there is no price that can be put on trust. I know. I've tried to buy it before. At the moment, however, my brother is completely undermining my words by allowing himself to be openly engrossed in whatever is happening on his mobile phone. I tap the spot on the table in front of him and say, "And don't even think about bringing your mobile devices into tomorrow's presentation. We don't want to seem as though anything is more important than the client, including whatever's going on this week on RuPaul's Drag Race." That worked. Byron snaps to attention. "I'm sorry, what were you saying?" I point to his phone. "Leave that at your desk during the meeting tomorrow." He shoots me a satisfied smile. "You are about to love both me and my little friend here," he says, shaking his phone at me. "I just received an invitation to the Dropbox holding the entire pitch Lassiter and Sons gave today." I freeze and blink a few times while I let that sink in. Lassiter and Sons is our main competition on this bid, and until this moment, they've had the upper hand, since W.L. Brown Sr. is godfather to Lassiter Jr.'s eldest boy. It's like someone handing you the answer key the night before your calculus exam at university. How exactly did you manage that? One of the draftsmen over there has a bit of a crush on yours truly. he says with a shrug. And to be honest, in this case, taking one for the team wouldn't exactly be a burden, if you catch my drift. The few female employees at the table giggle. Women tend to want Byron to apply for the position of gay best friend, believing he'll be just the thing to boost their flailing self-esteem and help them unlock the code to finding the perfect man. Wow, I can't believe someone sent that to you. My most junior of the junior architects, Jack Layton, says, scooting his chair closer to Byron's, let's see what they've got. Yes, let's, Byron says with a satisfied grin. If there's one thing Byron loves, it's being the center of attention, and with this little bombshell, he has most certainly captured the imaginations of a dozen people who, only moments ago, looked too exhausted to breathe. Cindy Pruitt, one of our project managers, speaks up from the far side of the table.
Wait, we're not going to look at it, are we? That's got to be some violation of some sort, right?
Oh, Cindy, why do you have to go all Jiminy Cricket on me? Can't we just take this one advantage and go straight to the top? I'll just never look at myself in the mirror again. It'll be fine. Ah, no, it won't. Damn, she's right. It takes everything in me to shake my head and force myself to say no. Of course not. That's not how we do business. Are you kidding me? Jack asks, sitting back in his chair.
You said it yourself. This is the most important pitch of our lives. If we've got an edge, we'd be stupid not to use it.
Double damn, he's also not wrong. Having access to the materials they've chosen, the design itself, and their fees would easily allow us to make adjustments that would solidify our position as frontrunner for this job. This is one of those moments when valuing your integrity sucks overcooked Brussels sprouts. Turning to my brother, I say, do not accept the invitation. Do not. Tell him you appreciate it, but no. As an afterthought, I add, you have my blessing to still take one for the team if you so desire. Just don't tell me about it.
Are you serious, Noel?
Senior architect Ali Berman says.
I don't know if this is how they do business in London, but in New York it's dog-eat-dog. I've got 4 teenagers, Noel. 4. They're going to break me financially between dance classes, baseball camps, saving for college, not to mention the food bill. Do you know what it costs to feed 4 teenagers?
$1,200 a month?
A few of the people at the table say. Ali's head snaps back, and Byron says,
you may have mentioned it.
Sorry, Ali, but I don't think it's worth the risk.
Cindy says,
I mean, what if we got caught?
And we're not going to get caught, I say, as 11 sets of hopeful eyes turn to me. Because we're not going to do it. Delete the email immediately. We're not trading our integrity for a job. Even if it is the biggest, most incredible project we'll ever bid on, and it's the type of legacy every architect dreams of having. Rats, I'm talking myself out of doing the right thing. No, Noel, stop that. What we are going to do is win this thing without cheating, or undercutting someone else's bid, or stealing their ideas. We don't have to stoop so low because we've put together the best team in the city. Plus, we've checked off every box the client is asking for, and then some. I glance around at their faces, giving them my best impression of an ultra-confident CEO. The response is underwhelming, to say the least. Okay, I say we call it a night. Go home and do whatever it is you do that helps you relax and recharge. Hopefully by this time tomorrow night we'll be celebrating. Thanks, everyone. Murmurs of relief and the closing clicks of laptops bounce off the glass walls of the floor-to-ceiling windows. A quick glance at the East River and the Brooklyn skyline behind it tells me it's late evening. A single ferry crosses the dark, shimmering waters of the river, taking the last of the haggard suits home for the night. I pick up my pen and jot some notes on a pad of graph paper while my weary staff slowly make their way out of the room. I don't dare look up because that would mean facing the utter disappointment in their eyes. I'm fighting every impulse I have to grab Byron's phone and download the presentation, and I don't need to see Ali's let-down expression as he slinks home to his brood of hungry children. Cindy stops beside me on her way out.
You did the right thing,
she says, touching my forearm in a way that makes me wish I had left the sleeves of my dress shirt rolled down today. I give her a quick nod and a distant smile. I appreciate your vote of confidence.
I'm not sure if it was the smart thing. I mean, we probably won't win the bid now, but it'll help you avoid prison time anyway.
She shakes her head at me.
I had a cousin who went to jail for tax evasion. I don't think you'd do well in that sort of environment.
Brilliant. I don't think I'd go to... Never mind. Have a lovely evening, Cindy. Byron is the only one who remains, tapping away on his phone. Do you need me to stick around, boss? His use of the word boss is done in the same vein that hipsters grow beards, ironically. What are the chances that you're going to actually leave here before midnight? Slim to none. Great. He says with a sigh. I'm not asking you to stay. Yes, I know, but that dreamy jazz musician asked me to dinner, and I won't enjoy it nearly as much if I know you're here toiling away into the wee hours all by yourself. Shall I pretend I'm going home too, so you can feel better?
That would be lovely,
he says, gathering up his laptop and water bottle. I stand, collect my things, and follow him down the long hall to my corner office here on the 42nd floor of the Liberty Bank Tower, the building that says to the world, I've made it. Byron stops at his desk and drops off his laptop. I'm just about to bid them a good night when I remember one last thing he was meant to take care of for me. Byron, I just want to make sure you've got the catering all set up for tomorrow.
Yes, of course,
he says in his how-dare-you tone.
What do you take me for?
It's just that occasionally you get sidetracked, I say as gently as possible. He picks up his messenger bag and gives me a steely glare.
Do you really think I don't know how to host a party?
I would never question your hosting abilities. But I overheard you earlier this afternoon when you slammed your hands on your desk and shouted, "The bloody caterer pulled out!" Byron rolls his eyes.
What kind of an assistant would I be if I didn't have a long list of catering companies at my disposal?
So you found someone? I say, giving him a pointed look.
Obviously,
he huffs. And it's not just some rando who happened to drop off a flyer. Planting one hand on his hip, Byron says,
I am officially offended. I know how important this meeting is, as if I would entrust something of this magnitude to just anyone.
Here we go. That's not what I said.
I just need everything to be absolutely perfect tomorrow. I assure you I will have an elegantly laid out, absolutely delectable lunch for the clients. The company I chose is extremely professional and highly regarded throughout the city. Now, if there's nothing else, I would like to go home and shower before my date.
Go, I say with a nod. Have fun. He hurries away, calling over his shoulder.
I won't tell you to do the same, because we both know you have no clue what that word means.
Fun doesn't pay the bills, I say as the elevator doors open and Byron steps on. He spins around, hits the button and announces,
Life is for making memories, not money.
The doors close, giving him the last word, but for once I don't care. I'm too tired to think of a good comeback. Sighing, I walk over to my desk and open my laptop, something about his words scratching at my insides. Dropping into my chair, I mutter, I know what fun means. Maybe I just have a different definition of it than most people. I open the presentation file to go over it one last time with a fine-toothed comb. You know what'll be fun? Watching W.L. Brown Sr. sign the contract tomorrow afternoon. That'll be a riot. I hope.
Chapter 3. Amy. I barely got any sleep last night. I'm fueled entirely by adrenaline and caffeine, but it's a combination that's never done me wrong. I stayed up until 2 a.m. cutting up fruit and marinating vegetables for the roasted veggie and herb goat cheese baguettes I'm serving. I woke up at 5 to grill the peppers, eggplant, and onions before assembling the sandwiches and rolling them tightly in plastic wrap so the flavors could continue to blend. Byron, my contact at Fitzwilliam & Associates, told me they want upscale sandwiches to be served alongside 2 salads and some kind of fresh fruit. All desserts should be in the cookie family. His last email said, And dear God, no crisps. No one wants to sit in a conference room surrounded by crunching. Byron must be English to call chips crisps,
I'm determined to give him the best catered lunch he's ever had, even if it means lessening my profit margin. If I can reel in a steady client, I can gradually increase my prices to market rate. Tisha calls at 7 sharp.
I covered my shift so I can help you today. When do you need me there?
You're a lifesaver, Tish. Can you come to my place and help me load everything into the van? I brought my catering truck with me from Rochester with fantasies of racing all over Manhattan and Brooklyn filling my head. So far, it's left its parking space under my building a grand total of 4 times. One of those times was to get gas.
You want me to come now? She asks.
Yes, please. You're the best, T. I'll see you soon. I hang up and hurry to my closet, looking for the perfect thing to wear. In Rochester, I usually went with the stereotypical black dress pants and white shirt. It wasn't important that I looked like anything other than I was there. But here in New York, I feel like I need to be super chic and more refined. You know, like the kind of person who works for the satisfaction of a job well done and not because I'm running low on toilet paper. Which I am. I settle on a navy wrap dress that hugs my generous curves without looking slutty. Then I roll my long blonde hair into a French twist, releasing a couple of wavy tendrils to avoid looking severe. After putting on a pair of low heels, I check myself out in the mirror that's wedged behind the bathroom door. I want to say that I look like a movie star from the 50s, sexy, feminine, and alluring, but the truth is, I'm giving off a modern-day Mary Poppins vibe. Why is that? I decide it's my matronly footwear that no other 28-year-old on the planet would be caught dead in. I throw a pair of higher heels into my bag so that I can put them on before serving lunch. I pull out 2 aprons with the company logo for nibbles and noshes on them. The 3 words all caterers have to remember are advertise, advertise, advertise. Once that's done, I start checking things off my list of everything that has to go down to the van. Tisha arrives wearing her work uniform. Black pants and a white polo. She takes 1 look at me and says, "You look efficient." What's that supposed to mean? Because it sure doesn't sound like a compliment.
"You look nice. Professional,"
she decides with her head cocked to the side. "Do I look like Mary Poppins?" Tapping her finger to her nose before pointing to me, she says,
"Yes, I knew you looked familiar."
I don't want to look like a British nanny about to spend the day drinking tea and flying kites, I tell her in a pout.
Psh, yeah, you do. Every little boy on the planet had a thing for Mary Poppins. The men will love you, and the women won't be threatened by you. It's a good look.
I don't have time to worry about it now. I hurry to the bathroom and generously spray on my favorite perfume in hopes of adding to my appeal before Tisha and I get busy loading up the truck. I keep my serving trays, utensils, and linens in the van because my apartment is too small to store them. Pushing aside a large storage bin, I make room for the coolers and assorted grocery bags.
"How many people is this lunch for anyway?"
my friend asks. 17, I tell her. I made enough for 22 just in case. You never want to run short, especially on a first impression. After pulling out onto 34th Street, which is the southernmost tip of the Garment District, we drive through Chelsea, Greenwich Village, Soho, and Tribeca before finally hitting the Financial District. I'm so in the zone that we've gone several blocks before I notice the trees, that only weeks ago were bare, are now full of lush green leaves. Some are adorned with pink and white buds primed to burst into blossoms. It takes us 45 minutes to go 3 miles. So surprisingly fast for New York. Pulling under the building, I park the van in the loading area by the elevators. With the emergency lights flashing, we unload. Then Tisha stands guard while I go park. By the time we're on our way up to the 42nd floor of the Liberty Bank building, my heart is racing like I just ran a 3-minute mile. I'm so nervous, I'm sweating. Lifting up an arm, I take a sniff to make sure I'm not stinky. My friend laughs.
"You smell fine. You look fine. Relax, will you? You're acting like you've never had a catering job before."
I need something steady to come from this if I want to stay in New York. I need them to like me.
"Girl, you're the most likable person I've ever met. Of course they're going to like you."
When the elevator finally opens, it takes a long time to climb 42 floors into the Manhattan skyline. I'm feeling a little better. A tall and very good-looking man with light brown hair is waiting in the lobby right outside.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?